Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. We made it. We made it. We're here. And welcome to the All Talk edition of The Social. Let's welcome everybody to the show today. iHeartRadio host Meredith Shaw is here with me in studio. Welcome back, Meredith.
Thank you. It is Mel. In studio. It is so good to be here.
Yeah, it's happening. It really, really is. We've also got back from Toronto public speaker Jam Gamble. Welcome back. Nice to see you, Jam.
Thanks for having me. Hi, everyone.
Hello. And rounding it out today, joining us all the way from Quebec City, the latest contestant who sashayed away on last night's episode of Canada's Drag Race, Océane Aqua Black. Welcome to the show. Bienvenue, Océane.
Hey, hello, guys. I'm so honored to be here. Oh, my God, I'm thrilled.
You look gorgeous, and we cannot wait to chat with you, with Jam, with you, yes. Meredith. And we've got the first topic, so why don't we dive in? Because actor Billy Porter, he's now calling out Vogue, of all publications, for last year's historic cover, which featured Harry Styles wearing a dress. So when it comes to men rocking dresses, Billy says he's the one who changed the whole game and questions why the magazine featured a straight white male on their cover instead of someone from the LGBTQ plus community. Who wants to start on this? Do you agree or disagree with Billy's take on this?
For what I think, sorry for my English, I'm still from Quebec City. But I think that there's two sides of this. I'll explain. Because, of course, it happened in the past that, you know, we've all seen it. Like, black people taking the back seat and everything. But I think that in this case, since we don't really know what happened, because, you know, sometimes there is no reason whatsoever, and I know a lot of black folks, and I love my community and everything, but I know a lot of people that, you know, take it personal. It's not always about racism. Maybe it's difficult to work with. Maybe, you know, it's not always about gay stuff or racism, you know what I mean? So it's difficult for me to say that I have a strong opinion about that, because I don't know either of them, even if I would like it so much.
Oh, yeah. To be on the cover of Vogue? Or what part is it that you would like so much?
The watermelon sugar.
Oh,
Mel.
Meet the boys.
Meet the boys. Got it. Okay. What do you say on this, Jam?
Yeah, you know what? When I saw that quote from Billy, I wanted to print it out and turn it into wallpaper. I started the game. And I was like, yes, let them know. Now, I can't really figure out who started what first, but I do understand where Billy's coming from, in the sense that we as black people, and I'm going to speak from our lived experience, we have done things, we've created things, and then people come and take it. And then when we think about giving credit where credit is due, we're often overlooked. Like, look at box braids. Black women have been doing box braids since the dawn of time. And then the Kardashians come out, and like, look at the cool trend that the Kardashians started. So it's examples like that, that understandably so, I think it frustrates us. And I actually have to applaud Billy for speaking out and letting people know.
You know, can I jump on that very quickly? Because I think you're onto something there, because the first thing that came to my mind is when we have discussions about appropriation, whether it's cultural appropriation, in this case, perhaps gender appropriation in some way. Mm-hmm. And it did get me thinking also, Jam, of the Kardashians, because they have been called culture vultures for a very long time, that even when you look at their aesthetic and the plastic surgery that they choose, many people have written pieces that they are choosing body parts to enhance body parts that are historically from a black woman's
black
body,
of
the black aesthetic, and then saying, look, it's lips are a trend. Oh my gosh, now look, butts are a trend. But they're not the first ones accused of that. I mean, we go back to someone like Gwen Stefani. Remember, she was doing the Harajuku girls.
Absolutely.
And sort of like, what is this? Are you appropriating? Are you appreciating? I don't know. Go back even further. Even Madonna with the historic song Vogue.
Yes, and that
people
ballroom.
Said, like, are you highlighting the gay community and the voguing tradition that was born by trans women in New York City underground? Or are you doing this? And ultimately, to your point, here's the problem I have. There's appropriation, and then there's, they all got a lot of bank in their pocket as a result of their actions. And did they give thanks where thanks and credit was due? And I don't know that everybody did that well.
100%. Can I jump in one more time?
Yeah,
I will
I'm
say
okay
this.
With that.
when, and again, I'm going to speak from the Black perspective, when we do put things out there, it's either deemed ghetto, we are weird, we are, and we know what happens in certain communities, how we are shunned for putting ourselves out there and expressing ourselves in a certain way. But when other cultures do it, it's appreciated, it's celebrated, it's groundbreaking, it's riveting. So I could see why this would sting for Billy, that he has been doing something that, unfortunately, within the Black community, and yes, there is a certain level of homophobia in the Black community, he's putting himself all out there. And putting him on Vogue, I think, would have been a major round of applause for people within racialized communities to see themselves represented. That's what we needed to see, and Vogue dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's about accountability, right? And it's about giving props to the labor that has been done. And I think it really is the responsibility of the person in privilege, here being Harry Styles, a white straight male, and also an entity in privilege, being Vogue, to pay homage to that labor. And the point that Billy raises is so important, and I like that he doesn't make it a blame conversation, right? It's not a binary. This is really about just having the conversation where that conversation is due. As someone who works in the body positive space a lot, I for sure know this was started by strong Black plus-size women. And if I speak in this community and don't know that, that's a problem. So I think it's not about blame, it's about change. And Billy is speaking truth to power, and I'm here for it.
I love that.
I'm here for it.
I also think that, like, for the Vogue part, I think that maybe it was a safe choice, if we can put it like this, you know, because they would have had less things coming at them, if I can say it like this. I don't know if you understand what I mean.
Yes.
Because sometimes it's simpler to say, like, well, we're okay with this, but we're going to do it this way. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's about a tipping
point. We are so open, but, well, we're going to do it this way because we don't want to frustrate a certain group of people or anything like this. And if I can say something about that, it's the same in the gay community, you know? Like, because I'm not the first drag queen ever to walk on the face of the earth. And there were people before me, and it's important to acknowledge all the work and all the things that they put out there, because if those people weren't there, I wouldn't be there today to do my art that I love so much.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Incredible points. Moving on to friendship. Okay, so we got all the feels right here. But friendship etiquette. A piece and stylist examines the reply-only friend, that person who only answers questions in your text conversation without asking anything about your life. So are you a reply-only friend? We got some tea happening.
I just want to say, that's partially me. That's not
what?
All me. I know, I sound like a horrible human being.
Explain.
Oh my gosh, look at Jam. She's like, I'm embarrassed. I don't know that woman. Jam just wants to get out of this segment right now.
I am reply-only.
You are?
Oh, you are too.
Oh my gosh, you're in the witness protection program with me.
Oh my God. Oh, OCN.
I get it. I was going to say, Jam, I want to hear your story. But, you know, all I want to say is it's not that I don't ask how you're doing. I was never the maintenance texter. Like, let me just text because. Mm. Let me just give you a call because I'm busy. I respect other people's time and they're busy. So an occasional check-in. But it's not like I'm not like, oh, I'm just only replying going, oh, yeah, everything's great. And then I don't be like, hey, how are you? It's not that I'm respectful of other people's time. And I'd rather have a face-to-face. I don't do well texting and calling for maintenance. Jam, what's your story?
That was a nice cop-out. Good job. Okay. Here's my thing. I realized this yesterday. I thought I was a good communicator. As a public speaking coach, I thought I was the queen of communication. Apparently, based off of this article, I am not. I am not.
Oh.
And I realized that when I am launching something or I'm sharing some good news, sometimes I feel that resentment when people don't congratulate me or message me. I'm like, well, nobody cares about me. And then I realized, wait a second, I'm not celebrating people.
I'll do it myself.
That's a big moment. I get it. I get that.
So I'm a big person. I admitted it. Okay, Melissa, the first step is admitting.
I'm admitting I'm not a good communicator, but I thank goodness my friends on the other side are.
I think we've all been through this really difficult time, and pandemic life has really allowed us to make some priorities, and that comes to friendship too, and who you want to stay in touch with, who you are staying in touch with, how you're staying in touch with them. I mean, I got to take the other moment here.
Give it to me. Give it to me, Meredith.
Because I've been really good girlfriends with the same 12 girls since I was literally 2 and 3 years old. And so this reply only friend, I don't know her. I don't know that friend. Like, I don't think friend should go at the end of that sentence. It's just reply only. Like,
can I
don't know if that's a reply only friend. Yes, yes,
of course.
You have
a group chat where everyone is chiming in at different times together.
Yes, and I have it on mute. Yes.
Oh, the truth comes out.
I like to reply in my own time.
Jam, I think we've got someone else to talk to right now. Meredith. Just teasing.
Wow. Apologies to Melissa, Meredith's friend. If you're looking for a replacement, I am here. Wow.
Oh, Sam, where do you fall in this discussion?
For myself, I think, unfortunately, I would have to say that maybe I am kind of an reply-only friend. But, you know, let me tell you, I've always worked like 40 hours a week doing shows 3 to 4 times a week.
And You're booked and busy.
You have rehearsal. We have a lot of things going on. So it's not that I don't care about people. But if someone messages me, of course, I'm going to reply and ask them in return. But you have to wait.
You just have to wait.
So basically what you're saying is you're me. We are the same. Stop it.
Basically, we've all realized we're all the same. So here's a topic we want to discuss with you. Have you ever felt overwhelmed at a brand new job? So someone wrote to the advice columnist at Slate saying she's recently taken on a managerial role in her company. And while the pay is great, she says the best pay she's ever had, she sometimes feels completely out of her depth. Who wants to dive in on advice? She's 28. She works in the healthcare industry. I don't know if that helps or not. Who wants to dive in?
Well, I can dive in because I really relate to this. If it's a job or even the competition that I just did, I went there. I didn't know what to expect at all. I was a little bit lost. But you know, what we have to remember is when you love what you do, there is no stopping. Like, don't hesitate to ask for help. And I think that asking for help actually shows a sign of intelligence. Mm-hmm. It means that you're motivated, that you want to know more. And, you know, it's encouraging because we never stop learning. Even, you know, I've been doing drag for 18 years now, and I never stop learning. So, like, go for it. And if you're passionate, nothing can stop you.
Okay, can I ask anybody else? I say she works in the healthcare industry. You know, if you make a mistake or you're learning and you're trying to, you know, perfect your performance on stage, Osean, maybe hopefully nobody's going to get hurt. But if you're working in the healthcare industry,
it's a new kind of pressure.
Does it change anything here?
That's true. I think it changes because we have the matter of security, of course, that we have to take into consideration. So I would say the best advice would be before doing anything, just be sure of what you're going to do. And if you're not sure, don't try to impress and say, well, I'm going to do anyway. Ask for help before, so that everything is safe for everybody, and that way you will still be learning. So
okay. That's I love what you said about passion, right? I feel like that's such a big part of it to kind of get you over the edge. And also, we're our own worst enemies a lot of the time. So we're thinking about all the things that everyone else must notice that we're missing, but they're probably thinking about all the things that everyone else is noticing that they're missing.
We need to, again,
have a little bit of grace with ourselves. And one thing that's really, because I felt overwhelmed taking my job at Show 104.5 here in Toronto, I moved from a different radio station. I didn't have a tech radio background. I Googled how to host a radio show, and here I was.
For real?
For real. So, you know, hope and a prayer and a net, and off you go. But, for me, I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to take this job because I have to learn a whole other board. But you know what? You get there, you figure it out, you make a mistake. Again, non-healthcare mistake, but you make a mistake, and you go on and you learn. And I think the biggest thing that helped me is you got to shift your focus on what you're doing instead of how you're doing. Because if you're constantly thinking about how you're doing, you're evaluating yourself in every minute, and you're taking that confidence away from yourself. So just shut the noise out, get on the task at hand, Google how to host a radio show, end up on the social. You know, it happens.
How to host a show.
This reminds me of a keynote I did 4 years ago, and I was invited to be the keynote speaker at a school board, and they wanted me to talk about being a 21st century innovator. And I was like, what? Me? So I had to Google what a 21st century innovator was, first and foremost.
I love this.
The imposter syndrome was real, right?
Yes.
Like the voice was telling me, you, how are you a 21st century innovator? Then they wanted to know my rate. And that's another ball game when you're trying to negotiate what your value is. What I did in that moment is I actually reread that email four times. And I asked myself, who is asking who to speak at this event? They're asking me. Who's asking my rate? Them or me? They're asking my rate. And then I went on my website and I looked at my bio and I'm like, hell yeah, I'm a 21st century innovator. And then I said, yes. So in those moments, sometimes we need to check ourselves. Of course, when you're stepping into a new role, the imposter comes out. Breaking news, the imposter voice is our voice. So have a conversation and said, first of all, I got the job. I'm here. Giddy up. Let's have some fun. In healthcare, I don't know, but still.
We keep giving the caveat.
I think we leave it right there.
Yeah, and speaking of fun, my fun is fashion. I know we all are rocking the looks today, but would you do this? There is a retro fashion trend making a comeback. Remember those bicep bracelets that were popular in the late 90s and early 2000s? Well, Dua Lipa was recently wearing one, and Vogue, yeah, we're talking about Vogue again, has given their seal of approval. So, Grello.
Yeah.
Are you into this?
Shaw. First of all, it's called an armband.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not your fault. Vogue, it's called an armband. And the 90s already did this, and we want it back. No, if I can pull up that picture again. Yeah, I don't know. What is that made out of? What's that made out of, Jam? What is that?
Oh, my
hair
gosh,
tie?
It's a headband.
What is it?
It's a headband.
It's a headband.
I don't know if quite that's
I mean,
the Dua Lipa
look, but
you know, it's a DIY Dua, right?
The little DIY. armband. I did this back in the day.
Of course.
It looked a little different than Jam's because I like to put it real tight. You know, I love to work out and I was like, oh, my biceps look good. So I'm going to like put the armband so like people can really look at. But it's not practical. Like if you're going to like actually have to use your arms, it's not practical. But if I look at that picture again of Dua, she's got every 90s thing going on there.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I want to talk about. There's the armband, the butterfly top. I think everybody had that.
In
butterfly everything.
Mariah Carey is happening.
Trucker.
Right? The trucker hat. The light wash denim. And so I love what's old is new again, but it just makes me feel old. That's the only problem. It just, I did all that. It just makes me feel old. That's all.
And that's a lot also.
This is the
that's
second
a lot
story
also.
Where Vogue is dropping the ball. Come on. First Billy, then you say yes to this armband. Come on. Throw the whole thing away. It's a hot mess.
My thing is, I just got to find the bicep first. That's my thing. I got to find
it. No, no. Anybody who's got an arm can do
it. I don't think if, you know, with the bicep, it's just not something I feel like I want to wrap something around.
Uh-huh.
I just don't know if that's the situation. And I also am really questioning, like, literally, did Anna Wintour say, yeah, this is cool? I don't think so. So Vogue, I'm not sure. But Dua Lipa can do no wrong. So she can rock the armbands. And then, you know, you can too. And Jam, I guess, the headband.
The headband slash armband.
I'm not rocking it, Meredith. I'm not rocking it. It's a hot no for me. It's a hot no.
That's what we say in our universe. Well, that's a choice.
That's a choice. It's our choice now to talk to you a little bit about the show last night because, you know, we know that you were eliminated in Canada's Drag Race, but my gosh, what an episode. It's always something about the show that I really love because a lot of you are so vulnerable in sharing your personal stories. And my gosh, I was in tears last night with my family, quite frankly, because you shared this moving story about your childhood in Haiti. You were abandoned at 11 months old in a forest by your parents. You did end up getting picked up, being put into an orphanage, eventually adopted. I mean, when you think about that at 11 months, where you are today, what is the connection for you in terms of how that shaped where your life has taken you to this point?
I think it's incredible. Like, if you would meet my family, you would like die. Like, they're the best ever. I've been so lucky to have been able to have people that find me. Cause you know, I could be still there and, I wouldn't do shows. I wouldn't do my art. So something that tells me that there is so many people in need that I was one of the lucky one, but I would wish it for everybody because, you know, and what's funny is that when they proposed me to my family, originally they wanted a girl.
Oh.
And when they saw me, they just said, well, it doesn't matter. We just love him, and it doesn't matter. We want him. And look now, they have both. They have both.
Two for one. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God. This is the best story ever. I'll say on. Thank you so much for sharing that. And we want to remind everybody that you can catch season two of Canada's Drag Race Thursdays at 9 p.m. on Crave, to Meredith, to Jam, to Océan. Thank you all for joining us today.
Aisha Alpha is joining us from LA. Hey, Aisha.
With my Friday shoulders on, baby.
They're looking great. And we are also excited to welcome from Toronto, actor and comedian and author, Sean Hitchens. Welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me back.
We are delighted to have you back and delighted to dive into these topics today. So we're starting by taking a look at the controversy surrounding Dave Chappelle's latest comedy special. In the special, Chappelle says things like, quote, gender is a fact, and that the LGBTQ plus people community are, quote, too sensitive. So this led to a walkout this week staged by Netflix staff and transgender activists. So, Sean, what's your reaction to how this has played out?
My first reaction is that perhaps it's time we put the stand-up special to rest, just for a little bit, because we are unable to have these complex conversations about intersectionality in a form that doesn't support it. And I watched the Dave Chappelle special with a group of friends, different identity combinations, and it provoked a very long conversation, which was productive.
Oh.
But ultimately, I think that the form lets down the conversation that needs to be had.
And yet, in your case, you did have a good conversation. Like, that's interesting to me. You had a group of diverse friends, and you actually had a conversation. I'm guessing people were coming from different opinions about it.
Right. I think that the problem with the conversation was that we were trying to figure out if it was, if its actual existence was right or not, and we missed the messaging. And it sort of... It was productive, but ultimately, I don't think that it was harmful as a queer person.
Mm. Aisha, you're a comedian as well. I'm curious your thoughts on this.
I mean, the first thing is, I think I am not trans. I would consider myself to be part of the queer community, but I'm not known as that. So my sensibilities aren't the ones that are the most important in this conversation, to be frank. He's not speaking at me or to me. I also feel like it's a really slippery slope when we start to say we should decide what should be out there and what shouldn't be out there, if a special should be on or should be taken down because it hurts some people. I mean, I think that in the end, even the folks at Netflix who wanted to walk out were saying they didn't want the special to be taken off the air necessarily, but what they did want is a deeper conversation about whose voices are represented. And so as we know, in most of media, there aren't a ton of trans voices, there aren't a ton of LGBTQ plus community voices, or as many as there are other voices. So when there are less of those voices to counterpoint against some of the things that are in the Chappelle special, it makes it really lopsided. So we're only seeing this one side, and then we're seeing a whole lot of other comedy specials from men or white people or, you know, people who are not part of this marginalized community, as marginalized. I mean, I know that Dave Chappelle does all these comparisons about being black and being trans and being LGBTQ, and it's kind of like some parts of it were like, I kind of feel like he's saying the equivalent of I have a black friend, you know what I mean? When it's like talking about having a trans person who he was working with well. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly the thing that we hate hearing from people who are talking about black people. So, I mean, it's very complex. It's very, very complex. I think the big thing is if the goal is to have Chappelle change, that's a bigger, you know, more difficult. And like, why are we trying to do that conversation? But then if that were the goal, then let's have him sit down face to face with some people from these communities that he has harmed. Let's have him sit down with some people from the LGBTQ community, with the trans community, who want to have a space that's safe to talk about it and get to know each other and discuss how it has harmed them, and not just be throwing daggers at him, like he says, with these talking points, but honestly come together and speak as human beings and feel each other's energies and hurts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the latest report today is that either from him or his representatives, they said that he was open to sitting down with trans people and trans activists to like open up this conversation. But I think that the reason why this has been, it's now 2 weeks, the special came out 2 weeks ago. And so this conversation has been front and center in Hollywood for 2 weeks. Number one, because it's Dave Chappelle, and he is the most successful and the most revered, for lack of a better word, stand up right now in the space. And number two, because Netflix is Netflix, right? It's a big deal. And the other conversation that's happening is how Netflix reacted to this situation. Their employees, including trans employees, came forward. They didn't feel heard. A memo went out from the head of Netflix, Ted Sarandos, that was quite disrespectful. It didn't feel very inclusive. And then a female trans employee was fired for talking about the situation and revealing information about the valuable, mysterious Netflix algorithm. And so it just, to people like, wow. So, you know, you are willing to stand by Dave Chappelle, but your employees are coming forward. And then one gets fired because you're like, oh, protect our IP and our algorithm. It just didn't feel right and sit right with people.
I understand that. I mean, it is such a complicated story. And I mean, as somebody who, full disclosure, I'm a huge fan of Dave Chappelle, and I don't think his comedy always lands, and sometimes it makes me deeply uncomfortable, but I think his heart is in the right place, and I think that's the lens that I'm seeing this story through. And Aisha, to your point, like, I think maybe my lens doesn't matter as a white, cis, mostly heterosexual person. I don't think that necessarily matters what I think, but what I do, I guess, hope for, first of all, let me just say, I haven't seen this special, so it's a bit unfair for me to really comment deeply on it, but he has definitely talked about the LGBTQ community in his comedy in the past. And he has pointed out, and I'll never forget this, I'm going to paraphrase his line. He said he never makes fun of anything that he doesn't see himself in. And so I don't know that if that means that a part of him identifies with the queer community in a way that he hasn't disclosed.
Yeah.
I don't know what the full story is, but he definitely feels a connection and then therefore feels licensed to kind of poke fun.
Yeah.
Whether or not you agree with that is another story. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is I just wonder, as this sort of, you know, anger has fueled up in the media and there's been this focus on him, he is a black man. Mm-hmm. And yes, he is a powerful black man at this point in time in history because of his success. But there's something about that doesn't sit quite right with me. And I hope that people are being as adamant about their anger and fueling their anger towards like entities that are actually very powerful also and are consistently doing harm. I'm looking at you, religious, right, conservatives.
Yeah.
Like, you know, are you as outraged on Twitter at that as you are lobbing at Dave Chappelle?
Well, and I think that he feels like he's part of these communities because it's quite evident that Dave Chappelle is hurt. He's a hurting person. He is a black man in this, you know, in America. So all I would venture to say, almost all black people in America are hurting. And he identifies with a marginalized group who has been oppressed, who hurts. I mean, Dave Chappelle, I'm a fan of Dave Chappelle's as well. I think that there's a lot of funny things. I think that it's kind of universal that he's a well-known, really successful, great comedian. And again, not everything lands, but he's also part, one of the things he talks about is how he is part of the people in the groups that have been kind of crapped on or like, you know, oppressed by other people. He's just not getting, I think, that there is intersectionality, like you were talking about, Sean, where there are multiple different things happening for people who are also black, who are also trans, who, you know what I mean? All these different levels that aren't just this one label that you can put on it.
Oh, and what I thought was, at the beginning of the special, I was really into what he was saying about how our identities as, and I'll speak specifically to my identity as a gay man, how it intersects race and capitalism and how we can choose to be marginalized until we're white. And at that point, I was like, oh, he's going to say it. He's going to say it. What I wanted was, and what I long for, is an opportunity for a gay man to stand on stage in a stand-up special in North America and address that part of his identity and make his audience uncomfortable. And we're still at a point where I can't put my finger on a gay comedian with a stand-up special yet.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, And it's a good point, Sean, because, I mean, I don't know that, like, for example, Hannah Gadsby, I think that we don't know whether or not, like, they refer to themselves as a comedian. They wanted to get out of comedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is because their work is more like social commentary and less of your say a joke, laugh, laugh, ha, 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 and then say a joke, laugh, laugh, ha, ha. Like, it's more of a presentation, like a TED Talk that is in the form of there are some comedic elements. But I think that that's also where comedy is heading. There are lots of so-called comedians who are pushing comedy in a different direction from what it used to be, because that space wasn't necessarily inclusive. Mm-hmm. And we've heard lots of, and Aisha, I mean, you can talk about this, and we've heard lots of reports over the last few years about this space and, like, who gets to be in stand-up. It's a buddy-buddy system. And I think that even though Dave Chappelle is a black man and there are certain things that are associated with his experience, in the comedy world, he is a god.
Yeah.
You know, a few days after this special came out, he was at the Hollywood Bowl cheering, thousands of people cheering him. And his words were, if this is what canceled feels like, not bad. You know what I mean?
I know.
And so
I think we want comedy to continue to open up conversations like what Sean was saying and also push the envelope. And sometimes they're going to make mistakes. And then hopefully it sounds like Dave's doing the right work to try to mitigate that harm.
Jamie Foxx told E! News that he's never been interested in traditional marriage, and in fact, never marrying strengthened his bond with his two daughters. Have your views towards marriage changed over time?
So I'm of the mind of the conscious uncoupling. I feel like relationships work until they don't, and if you don't shift and change the relationship, it dies. And so there's so much to learn by allowing our relationships to grow and change and develop, and ultimately you find a more powerful expression of love between two people. And to put that in a way of like saying, if marriage is a dance and you're in a dance with somebody for a long time, do you only dance to the same song over and over and over? Or do you allow the song to change? And do you continue to dance when it's hip hop? Do you continue to dance when it's a tango? Do you continue to dance when it's like an opera? And I think that's how I view marriage and how I want to build relationships in the future, is just allowing them to be plastic and not limiting in both our growth and our growth together.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
It's a really good analogy.
You and I both have been in long-term relationships. You're married. I'm technically not married, although I did have a wedding. But I feel... With two wedding dresses. And I feel very married. When we were starting to think about it, we were just kind of like, oh, I don't ever want to be called a wife. And he's like, I don't want to be called a husband. And we started thinking about, like, what do we want this relationship? It's not that we're not committed to one another, but I think we keep on refreshing and kind of, I feel like you'll appreciate this. I have said recently that I feel like I've been in about 10 different relationships. And some of those relationships have been on the rocks at times, and other ones, even during COVID, I feel like it has really deepened and strengthened our relationship. I just hope more and more people think about marriage, that it doesn't have to be, that's not the only one way you can go. Like, you can still be committed, you can still do all kinds of different things in your relationship, but it doesn't have to look one way. So either redefine marriage itself or just forget it. Why do you need it? I don't need it.
I never... ever wanted to be married because of the way that I had framed marriage and seen marriage in my head. It felt very limiting. It felt very oppressive. I didn't want to be somebody's little wife. Like, I was very, and I used to be a wedding planner. Like, I'm like, I love weddings. I love marriage for other people. I love love. I was just like, not for me. I was like the Nina Simone song. You know what I mean? Where she's like talking about, I'm just like, it's not for me. But I'm married. I mean, Sean, you might not know this about me, but I am actually married. As I'm like, nobody should get married. A wedding is a sham. But it's like, I'm married to a man because I realized, like, oh, I get it. Like, when you're with a person that you really love, you can be committed for life. And like you guys are talking about, you can both grow and shift and change. And it's hard at times and it's easy at times and wonderful. And that's great. And that can also be marriage. I just never put those two things together. And I remember thinking, like, I wanted marriage licenses to have expiration dates. because I thought people should have to renew over and over and recommit.
Honey, it's expired. You open up the fridge, honey. The milk has expired and our wedding is expired. What are we going to do?
I just get like a new dress every time and a new party every time. This is what I want. I just want more parties and more dresses. But yeah, I think that I get what he's saying about how not committing blindly to this thing that, you know, traditionally in some places in the world really does mean oppression for people. Mm-hmm. Not committing blindly to it is like you're choosing then how you commit to somebody else, which I think is a beautiful act of like defiance and love. It's wonderful.
I love these stories, a beautiful act of defiance and love to be with one person. And it's an interesting way of thinking of it because it is hard to stay married. I am like in 10 days, 11, 12, I will be celebrating my 20th wedding anniversary.
What?
20 Congrats. Years, and that's a long time.
Yep.
And as you're saying, Aisha, there is defiance. Like there are things we had to push through. So, you know, Sean, you were talking about different songs. Like one day or like 1 month, it's an Adele heartbreak ballad, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, a month later, it's a dance jam and everything's great. And then 6 months later, we're back to, you know, crying our tears away to whatever, Radiohead, the most depressing music ever. But I love them. But I mean, I think that like there's an illusion about how easy it is to be married. And I don't think that in the past we talked about people talked about how hard it is to stay loving someone and to be loving and stay interesting. Mm-hmm. There was a time when like I told my husband, I was like, if you stay this boring, like we're in trouble. You know, and what I meant was like he had to bring something to our conversations.
Right.
He had to make me interested in him. And he took it. He took the feedback and we're okay for now, but we may have to have a conversation. He might say to me,
I hear you.
You're boring. You're basic. Pick it up.
Yeah. Okay, hang on. Can I read this? This might take us into a different direction, but Andrea on Facebook said, thoughts of being alone or divorced are still so taboo, so people don't explore anything other than traditional relationships. As I grow and evolve over time, so do my relationships. I find it hard to think only one person can fulfill all your changing needs for 50 plus years. Yes, Andrea. I love this also that I think we do need to talk more about the idea of just kind of like, maybe Jamie knows himself. Maybe Jamie's just like, I just need to be kind of floating between different relationships and that's my best self. And as long as you know that, like, I think that that's, you know, he's not afraid of being alone, or is he? I don't know.
You know. I'm not sure that he's ever alone or lonely.
Yeah, he is Jamie
Yeah,
Fox.
He just hasn't. Yeah. Right, but I agree with what our viewer said about, you also don't want to make your marriage the only significant relationship in your life. You also have to be married in a way to friends.
Yeah.
You know, and treat those relationships with the same gravitas.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think people who think you can get every, like this person said, you can't get everything from one person. Mm-hmm. And even when you are married in a long-term marriage, you shouldn't be getting everything from that one person. Mm-mm. Like, I'm not going to talk about my husband and my gripes with my husband to my husband. And I need my ladies so I can have a glass of wine and be like, you know what he did?
Yes.
You know what this fool
did?
Like, I need that space. I need time away from my kids. I need time away from my family. I need time away from my husband. That's just, I think we all have to have all those different aspects of your life and relationships to have a whole life where you can fully express yourself and then not be disappointed in one person who can't be everything for you, because you will be if you expect one person to do it all.
Yeah. I think that a large part of it is also we need to commit to our communities, and part of our relationships and our marriages needs to be essentially community building and making sure that we are investing so that we just don't have that one person carrying the burden of everything we need.
Yes,
yeah. So that we can have,
I was going to say, especially not when you start having kids. You don't want to carry just that one burden. You need to spread that burden out. Sean, I want to ask you, you have a new book out. Congratulations. It is called Light Streamed Beneath It. And you use humor to talk about some pretty tough things. Let's talk about what viewers, readers can expect from this memoir.
So we call this book Eat, Pray, Love minus the travel budget, or somebody else called it Joan Didion plus gay sex. Those are the two things. It is me encountering a midlife unraveling, paired with the back-to-back timings of two deaths, one of my ex, Matt, and of my on-again, off-again, on-again, off-again fiancé, David. And it really, once your past has been evaporated and your future goes away, I had to sit painfully in the present and find a way to move forward. And for me, that was through words, which is sort of what I do now. I write, so.
Sean, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that and for writing this book. It's going to impact so many people. Aisha, it's been so lovely having you all week. And you're going to be with us next week, right?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Sean, it's been so nice having you here as well. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites.